The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, this is Sports Talk 1240. It's Raymond Mora here, Uko Asanya sitting across from me. We are back, a young group of the cast. Let's just be honest here. We're the young group.
Yeah.
So we can relate to everybody listening in right now. You can call in at 601-888-8811 to talk about your favorite New York sports teams and all the sports around the world, if anything. But before we start the show, Uko, I gotta tell you what happened to me this week. So I went to Branson, Missouri.
Okay.
And, you know, at first, you know, waking up really early on Wednesday morning, like around 4 o'clock to take a flight at 6:30 was annoying because the JFK line is always really long. And, you know, going through all that security process and all that, it just got really annoying. So, you know, I get on the plane, get some sleep, and then I get to first stop, which is Charlotte, because it's a transfer plane. So I got all scared.
Talking about the edge of transferring through Charlotte?
Yeah.
Well, Charlotte's actually a pretty nice airport. So
it actually is.
It's not that bad. But did you have the attendant in the bathroom that, like, gave you, like when you go to the bathroom in Charlotte after you're done washing your hands, there's literally somebody there with either mints or paper towels for you to dry your hands off. Was that the case today?
It was. I mean, not really. I think you just go to the bathroom and, you know, you do what you gotta do.
But there wasn't an attendant there?
No.
That's weird.
Not for that.
I haven't been to Charlotte in a couple
years. But, you know, then, you know, I went there and I was kind of panicking about the whole, you know, your luggage and baggage claim and stuff, but it was transferring to the other plane. So when I got to Missouri, Branson, Missouri, I finally got my luggage and I got, you know, I was like, thank God, you know. So then I got there and the whole experience was interesting because even though they do root for the St. Louis Cardinals around that area, and, you know, that's their baseball team now since most of their teams have left them of Missouri, it was interesting to see how the whole town was just all about this food and ice cream and live shows. I mean, those fans really love those live shows. Not that many people on most of those shows, but when it's packed, they really love their fans. But the one thing that I could tell you, though, is that city really, they really love their food, and it's probably why it's one of the top fat cities in the world, because
watch your words, man.
Well, I'm just saying, because, look, come on, man. They have a donut dog. Like, do we have that in
New
York City?
Tell me that doesn't sound dope in one way. Like, what was in it? Tell us what was in it.
A donut and a hot dog, basically, sausage of it, and
okay,
cheese.
Okay, but what kind of donut was it?
It was like a creamy type of dog, like a, you know,
like a Boston cream donut. Sort,
yeah,
of
like one of those creamy type of dogs. Yeah.
And what kind of meat did they use for the donut dog? Was it like beef? Was it pork? Because I'm actually very interested now.
It was exactly as I told you right now. It is, well, it's like a, you know, a basic dog, but it had also bacon and cheese.
That sounds like fire. Are you? That's fire!
There's also something called a donut burger, which is basically, you know, a grilled hamburger patty with cheese, lettuce, and tomato with a donut inside.
That sounds fire, too!
That sounds really fattening and looks like death food. That's what it is.
Yeah, if you have it every day. But and that sounds fire!
There's also something called monster fry bread. Which is basically fried bread with a bacon mayo spread, Chipotle mayo topped with cheese, sausage, chicken straps, bacon, brisket, cheddar, and mozzarella cheese.
I'm going to Branson.
You want to go to Branson?
I'm going to Branson. I'm convinced. I want to go to Branson.
It's too much.
That is fire.
Again,
you don't have to eat it every day. I just want to have most of this stuff like once, maybe never again, but just to do it once or pieces of each. I don't know, but it all sounds really, really good.
I mean, it was really good. And I also met some interesting travel journalists there. It was fun talking to them about the whole experience, about them being journalists as well, and, you know, the whole places, and we were trying to figure out ideas on how to write our own articles for it. But the whole experience was interesting. And then, of course, when I got back here, the whole process of the airport, I get annoyed because, you know, first, not just because of these delays. Like, I feel like the delays have been happening everywhere I go now. Airplanes, trains, cars, everywhere I go now, it's just delay. I don't know why. And then you know how people put the bags on the plane?
You mean carry-on
bags? Yeah, carry-on bags.
Uh-huh.
Well, I get annoyed about it. It should be like a rule in airports where if it's not on your side, don't put it on that side. You put it on your side, not on somebody else's side.
You're being a little petty on
this. No, but come on.
You're being a little petty on this.
Like, I come to my section, and then I see a bag there. I'm like, dude, it's not even your section. This is my section. I put my bag here. You put your bag on your own section.
But I'm assuming that the plane was full, correct?
Yeah, but that's not my problem. Like, I feel like there should be a rule. If it's not on your side, then you put the bag in baggage claim.
If I'm paying the same amount as you, heck, if I'm paying at all to be on this plane, I will put my bag where it will fit. I don't care if it's over your seat. I have done that countless of times. Not because I wanted to, because if I had it my way, I'd rather have it over my seat. I don't really want you touching my bag. But if there's nowhere else to put it, I'm putting it in your section, and you just have to move with
it. It's still annoying, though, man. There's got to be a rule, okay? Like, I'm tired of that.
It doesn't need to be a rule, because nobody's going to follow it. It's just like when they say on the subway, hey, don't hold open the doors. How many times do you see somebody go, hey, yo, wait, and stand in front of the door trying to prevent it from closing? It's going to be the one rule nobody cares about at all.
Still, that delay was ridiculous. It was an hour delay before I got in, you know, getting into New York. And we saw this, you know, that seatbelt thing that they do on the video or whatever, you know, how to get a seatbelt.
Right.
It twice. I don't need to see that another time. We just showed it before we were about to go off, but then we had another delay. We had to see that again. That was annoying. But I got here, and, you know, a couple of things I learned there is that there was this Kentucky guy from the restaurant that we ate, you know, because there's also a North Carolina person that was one of our, you know, our advisors that taking us to places and everything.
Oh, that's going to be fun.
It was funny, you know, he's like, no hard feelings, nothing personal or anything, because, you know, Kentucky lost to North Carolina and everything, which reminds me, what I wanted to get into, actually, before we get into all the baseball stuff for New York City. I want to get a little bit about this college tournament and also North Carolina winning it. First off, I got 93% in my bracket, so I'm happy about that. I beat Michelle Beto and a lot of people on ESPN, so I'm happy about that. But that game was interesting because people going to say it's boring and, you know, it wasn't fast-paced like last year or whatever. What I liked about the game is that it kind of went back into kind of the old-school basketball where you rebound, play tough defense. Even though the only thing that was a problem really was the foul calls, which there's a foul call on almost every single possession because of how physical they were playing. But basically, it was just rebounding, making shots, not that many three-point shots. I mean, North Carolina was shooting, less than, 25% from the three-point, as a team, so they really won this game on rebounding and fast-break points. Gonzaga had a stretch where they couldn't even score, in 7 minutes, and then when they finally did score, it got close, but then, you know, North Carolina blocked a shot, and pretty much the game was sealed from there, and they won the title.
I mean, here's what I don't like about that game. We already knew coming in that it was going to be a physical game. You had a 6'10", 6'9", 6'11", front line for North Carolina.
Yeah.
Gonzaga had 2 7-footers. So you would assume that the game was going to be more physical as it is. Karnowski's a big dude. Kennedy Meeks is a big dude. But then for the game to be called so tightly, it took a lot away from the game. And I'm as big a college basketball fan as anybody. But that game was outright boring.
You think it was boring?
That game was outright boring.
I thought it was interesting.
Like, you're trying to feed Kennedy Meeks the ball. Backs in. Foul call on nothing. Meanwhile, Nigel Williams' guards can get hacked going to the hole, and it was just really inconsistent where the post players were involved. It was really inconsistent, and I hated it. Like, you can do so much better when it comes to refereeing, because here's the thing, I know it's so hard, and I'm not here to just belittle the job or the fact that they were even named to the Final Four. It's a long process to be named as a referee in the Final Four, but that game in itself was just, it was bad.
What I did like, though, was that Barry for North Carolina did step up. He'd been struggling for the past couple games leading up to that game, and he did make some big shots for them. I think he's going to be a good player. Maybe he'll get drafted in the NBA, I think.
I don't know. Look, Marcus Paige was worlds better than him.
He was.
And he went in the second round. I don't think we see Joe Barry drafted in the first round.
Is he in the second round then?
Late second round. Justin Jackson is probably a lottery pick.
You know, it'd be a good team for him, though, Barry. I think if the Spurs somehow just got him, you know how Spurs,
the Spurs make a habit of picking up really good college players and turning them into outright superstars. They made the biggest trade ever, George Hill for Kawhi Leonard, because they saw it coming.
And Popovich said, even quoting when he did that, that was the scariest thing they've done because they were nervous of what would have happened if they did this trade and it didn't go as planned. But no one saw Leonard being this great, which we'll talk about more in the show.
Which is true.
But going back to North Carolina game, this team now has won a title almost in every decade. You know, they won this decade, they won the last decade with Raymond Felton, and of course 2009 also in that team. They won it in the 90s and won it in the 80s. This is a pretty much a dominant program. And then you look at people who rooted for Gonzaga because they've never been there. And to me personally, though, I wanted to move North Carolina not just for the bracket, but you know, I'm pretty much kind of a fan of North Carolina more so than in the tournament. But
well, that's fair.
It was interesting, though, that when people were rooting for Gonzaga, just how, you know, how sad they were when they lost. Even the players, when they knew they lost after they got that steal of North Carolina and dunked it, the game was over.
I mean,
it was sad.
Here's the thing. Gonzaga was going to be on track to be the first national champion from a non-Power 5 conference since UNLV did it back in the early 90s. And they were poised to do it. But what they're going to look back on is just missed opportunities for Karnowski inside.
Yeah, he missed a lot of open
and
shots.
And Nigel Williams-Goss. I will not ever be somebody to demean an 18 to 22-year-old for having a bad game. Because they're... Let's face it, college treats these kids like professionals without paying them and then has the gall to call them amateurs.
Yeah.
But if there was ever a time not to have a bad game, the national championship would be that game. And it's tough to see him have to struggle through all of that. And for Gonzaga, Gonzaga is consistently disrespected. Consistently. They're always seen as the weaker one seed. They didn't do enough. And the WCC is no slouch of the basketball conference either. BYU has always been a staunch program, and that's always their chief rival, Gonzaga. And they had St. Mary's as well, who's been in the top 25 most of this season. So, you know, it would have been nice to see Gonzaga take it, but, man, North Carolina is just, they're so deep. That's why they're a threat to win it every year.
Yeah, and they're a threat to win it. Kentucky are, Duke, of course. I mean, those are the teams. Those are the teams leading by coaches that been there, done that. And to see a Gonzaga team go this far, even to see South Carolina that lost in the Final Four, to see that team go as far. I mean, those programs are probably going to be doing big things in the future, hopefully. But it all just depends on the structure of their organization and also the team itself and the players who they get.
I think what South Carolina did is a testament to the idea that the right coach changes everything.
Yeah.
I mean, Frank Martin left Kansas State under really acrimonious circumstances. And to be quite honest, he should still be at Kansas State, but the athletic director at the time decided to be petty for no apparent reason. Like none. And to be quite honest with you, when he took the job at South Carolina, all the news wasn't out about Kansas State yet. The whole college basketball world said, wait, what? South Carolina was already a laughingstock in the SEC. But he took a page out of an actual champion winning from South Carolina. Shout out to the South Carolina Gamecocks women's basketball team.
Oh, yeah.
Dawn Staley winning her first title and also the first black coach, or African-American for those who have their panties in a bunch, the first black coach to win a title since Carolyn Peck did it with Purdue back in I believe, 1999. But back to Frank Martin, absolutely game changer. And now you have all the good kids staying home, like Zion Williamson, the dunking phenom that's like 16 years old from South Carolina.
Yeah.
I'll be damned if he leaves the state. I don't think there's any way he doesn't go to play for Frank Martin at South Carolina.
Speaking of that women's college basketball game, it was the game before that between UConn and
Mississippi State.
Mississippi State.
Legendary.
That was, even as
oh
a fan,
my God.
You know how excited I was when she made that shot? I even screamed. I'm like, it's not even my team, but it's just an exciting
God.
Game that he made that shot and broke the streak.
Listen.
That was incredible.
If and this is where I get to just say, if you don't watch women's college basketball, you're not allowed to say it's boring. If you say, oh, UConn's horrible for the game, you're no longer allowed to say that. It was supposed to be academic, UConn going to the national championship game. Except Mississippi State said, I don't think so. Because, don't get me wrong, UConn, time and time again, is usually the most talented team on the floor. But let's keep this in mind. Number one, they graduated three seniors who went 1, 2, and 3 in the WNBA draft. So what was left of that very talented roster were all kids. And Coach Auriemma traditionally plays a very tight rotation, and with good reason, because those who are waiting in the wings have to learn and they have to pay their dues. But once those three are gone, and now the pressure's all on them, like, okay, you have to keep it going now. And then they look to their left and their right like, what? And Coach Auriemma, who, first of all, give him credit for the class he showed after that loss to Mississippi State, but also give him credit for keeping perspective. It's not easy as a coach to have the streak going and keep perspective, but he straight up said, you know what? We should have lost a couple of times this year because we weren't focused.
Mississippi State, though, was like, they were down. Actually, they lost last year against the same team by 60.
Yep.
And they came back and won this game by a buzzer beater.
And Vic Schaefer said, incredible. And Vic Schaefer said as much all leading up to that game. He said, we were embarrassed because they're a good team. They're a great team, but they weren't 60 points better than us. Although with Breanna Stewart, Mariah Jefferson, and Morgan Tuck on the same team, maybe they are 60 points better. But you have to really give that program a lot of credit because just like South Carolina on the men's side, Mississippi State women's basketball, there wasn't much to work with either. And Vic Schaefer had worked under Gary Blair, who won a championship with Texas A&M, I want to say back in 2008. I hope I'm getting that correct. That lineage he brought with him to Mississippi State and turned them around a lot quicker than anybody expected.
You know, I know we've been talking a lot about the NCAA tournament, but the reason I wanted to bring up in this show was because, you know, it's not like we had the show on Tuesday and we don't talk about the game, but that was pretty much a game for some fans to say it was boring. For me, I say it was more old school basketball. And maybe you look at it in today's NBA, how, oh, you look at all these 3-point shooters, but at some point, there are going to be games like this where it's a grind now and boring fouls after foul and all that. I mean, that's just how it is.
I don't think it has to be that way. The game still has to move a little bit faster. And the way that the post players are taught today, they have pretty much learned that they can't really take all the time in the world and do all the moves. Like, you look at Shaq's highlight tape, people assume that he would just take the ball and plod down there. No, Shaq was an athletic freak. 7 foot, he was still heavy and still quicker than nearly everybody guarding him, and even quicker than some guards. But just translate that to today's game, those posts try to move as quickly, if not quicker. So I don't think that it's really an issue of tempo when it comes to different playing styles. As for why this past game was boring, there were just a lot of foul calls.
But don't you think, though, that the teams that made it to the final are teams that, well, one team had, like, I think top 5 in assists in the country, and another team had big players that can post up and beat you in the paint?
I'm not saying, no, you're right. None of that was to say that attacking the paint is not the way to go. That's not what I was saying at all. What I was saying is that not everything everything concerning scoring in the paint has to go through a post player that plays with his back to the basket.
And that's what's really killing the NBA, though, if you think about it, because now you look at AAU basketball, too. Like, the kids aren't learning the fundamentals of the game, like even footwork and all that, but also for the big players, not posting up because now they're just shooting threes now.
I got a 6'10 kid who disagree entirely. But I just really think that, first of all, if we're gonna have the AAU conversation, you got to look way younger than high school, because by the time they get to high school, habits have already been ingrained. And for many of these kids who folks are mad are shooting threes, they came up as guards. Anthony Davis was like 6'5", 6'6", until his senior year of high school.
That's true.
And that's why he's being renowned as this do-it-all seven-footer. Because he had to learn how to do everything else before playing with his back to the basket. So, I think we need to be really careful about just judging the kids off of nothing. But that's just my opinion.
We have winning it next year in college.
Man, call me in October.
It's too early, right?
It's way too early. Because we know that Kentucky is going to reload. We know that North Carolina is going to reload.
Duke.
Of course.
Every year.
By the way, Grayson Allen should stay and get his degree. He has no business going to the draft, but that's a story for another day. Look, it's way too early. Let's actually let everything rest. Let's let the coaches get out there and recruit. It's transfer season, too, so I think it's really fun to see who could go where. Because I like the idea that the kids can actually call the shots on where they want to go, especially the grad transfers. No more of this sitting out a year nonsense. They have their paper and they can go wherever they want, and I think that's fun.
But you think the one and done is kind of messing up the way these kids are developing, getting into the NBA, because some of these kids are just skinny, and then when they get to the NBA, they get pushed around by grown men, and pretty much the confidence just drops, and then it's hard for them to get it back.
I think the better question is, if you are said kid, would you rather have to do the lifting and have to do the work for free, or would you rather get paid to do it? That's why a lot of these kids go to the draft early. And let's be real about this one-and-done rule. It was only instituted because NBA GMs made a habit of picking really young, really raw kids and not seeing them pan out. The GMs and the owners involved, in my opinion, didn't really do due diligence when it came to selecting those kids. So now let's take that a step forward. Now you require them to spend 1 year in college, where if a kid wants to go to the league, then he can go to the league after 1 year. There's no reason to stay past the minimum. What was John Wall going to get out of 4 years at Kentucky? Nothing. Everybody knew he was going to the league the moment he stepped on campus. Same thing for DeMarcus Cousins or anyone who gets criticized as a, quote, one-and-done guy. I mean, they've been working at this sort of thing for years. No sooner than 3 years, depending on how talented they are or how hard they worked. And now you're going to tell them that, oh, you have to stay for a year when your skills are ready now? Well, stay for 1 year and bounce. Ben Simmons did it. Ben Simmons only came to Montverde because he didn't want to play overseas and then end up getting jobbed out of being selected in the mid to late first round when all you got to do is come to America, be in an American high school, go to a school like LSU where you could pretty much do whatever you want, and then go number one anyway. Like, there's no incentive to actually be a student. And in a way, the one-and-done rule makes a mockery of colleges. Because when you're recruiting the kid, you know he's not really trying to be a student-athlete.
Yeah.
He knows he's not trying to be a student-athlete. That doesn't mean you don't try to work hard for the sake of working hard. But let's take this whole sense of false morality out of this whole process. You both know what you're getting into. So don't criticize the kid for taking control of his own life. Don't. It's ridiculous.
But the one case I can make for this one and done is that it's really messing up the students or the kids' mindset of getting into the NBA because the maturity factor.
How so?
Because the maturity factor will be in effect. I mean, look at players like John Wall, right? And you look at Cousins. Well, what's the problem with them for most of their career? It's been the maturity for them. They've been either disrespected because of the way they act on the court or all this frustration that Cousins does on the court. Even Wall earlier in his career, not that Wall is more mature now, but even looking at Cousins right now, he hasn't changed at all. He looks like the same player he came into the league.
Well, first of all, let's be real about the whole John Wall controversy. The whole John Wall controversy happened because Colin Coward can't keep his mouth shut. And that's all I have to say about that. As far as DeMarcus Cousins goes, I've read so many articles, and I think Kevin Arowitz has a write-up on, I believe, ESPN the magazine that really outlines what the real deal is with DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, let's be real. Like, let's be really, really honest here. Everything gets heaped on the kid when he's 19, 20, 21 years old, and I get that. Does college fix all that? It's not proven, and I'm not really sure that being in college for longer really fixes all that. But at any rate, he gets drafted by the Kings, an organization that clearly has no idea what they're doing. The smartest thing that the Kings have done since DeMarcus Cousins was drafted was hire Nancy Lieberman to be on their coaching staff. And I have a feeling if they let her run the team, they wouldn't be half as putrid as they are now, even after they traded him. Because if you look at the way they handled everything, not taking away from his missteps and the wrong that he's done, but if they really cared about how crucial he could be to their franchise, they wouldn't have had half the hell they had when he was with them. The one you knew he had problems communicating with coaches. There was one coach he was actually getting along with. The team had general success with. Then you go bring him into a meeting and say, look, we ran some numbers. Dumbest line ever, by the way. We ran some numbers, and we feel like you'll be served better under another coach. He's like, I don't like it, but fine. When are you going to make this decision? Oh, we already made it. That's what happened with Mike Malone. And that's back when people looked at the Kings and said, oh, they could be a really decent team this year. But it's total ineptitude. So now you take that same 19-year-old kid who's still trying to deal with growing up, who's still trying to deal with having the world put on his back, in a sense, and you're going to put him in that mess and expect him to come out rosy? I don't understand that. I really don't understand it. It's almost like everyone forgot that he's a 19-year-old kid. Just because he's 6'11 and looks like a grown man doesn't mean that he's not 18, 19 years old. Like, perspective really matters here. And people really fail to do that when it comes to young basketball players coming out. And there's so many levels to this that we don't really... It's a story for a longer than an hour show, let's put it that
way. Yeah, yeah. We got to move on, actually. We got to talk about the Yankees and Mets. When we come back from the break, we're going to discuss a little bit about these both teams and the directions that they're heading right now, because it's kind of interesting to see how they're starting compared to two football teams. We'll be back here on Sports Talk 1240.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Back here on Sports Talk 1240, it's Raymond Moore here with Guadalupe Sonia. You know, we were just debating a little bit in the break that we have to get a little bit more about this debate before we actually talk about the MLB teams, because, look, I see that this one-and-done thing has affected these players, because if you look at it back then in the past, you see players that come out after 3 years, they look more mature, more built for the NBA, and you see the product being on display as if compared to it right now, where you see one and done, and you see why players are getting, or teams are getting blown out, or players aren't fundamentally sound on the court. I mean, even Kobe Bryant has commented on that. Even Kevin Garnett has commented on that. But you can't make a case for both of them because they got drafted out of high school.
And exactly.
And they're different.
So that leads to my question. If going to college is that much of an improvement, why bother having the one-and-done rule at all? Why not do it the way baseball does it? Where baseball goes, all right, you can go pro out of high school, or you go to college and you go for 3 years. If the primary concern of NBA GMs and these schools are that kids are not prepared for professional athlete life, then why require them to go to school for 1 year at all? If this one-and-done rule is such a sham and such a bad thing, why require them to go to school at all? Because we know good and well that Kentucky's not Kentucky without the one-and-done rule.
It's true.
A lot of these big schools that send players that you don't hear much about until they declare, and then you see their numbers and go, oh, they're pretty good, they don't get those kids. Washington, up in Seattle, has not been to the NCAA tournament in the past 3 years. But they still have the potential number one pick in the draft in Markelle Fultz.
Markelle Fultz, Lorenzo Ball, Fox from Kentucky. And you look at this draft, and it's deep, and there's a lot of players that are one and done. And these teams are the, you know, bad teams like the Lakers and Boston, unfortunately, because the Nets traded their pick away, and the Knicks.
I'll laugh about that forever.
Yeah, and the Knicks, and, you know, hopefully they actually get a point guard for their team and not just because of the triangle. But is it, do you think maybe because of the draft that allows scouts to look at these players and say, well, we should draft them and develop them into becoming mature and fundamentally sound players, or just look at them and say, are they like their savior for their organization, looking like a decent organization rather than a dumpster fire?
I think that in a front office, you see potential in a kid. Maybe don't listen to all the savior hype. A lot of that does come from the media, who sees the kid and goes, oh my God, he's going to make the Knicks relevant again, or oh my God, he's the second coming of Kobe Bryant, and Brandon Ingram's going to gain 100 pounds and become the second coming of Shaquille O'Neal. Like, crazy stuff like that. But I sincerely feel like when you look at these front offices and they look at these players, development has to be the number one topic. Because college Lonzo Ball, is not going to win games that Lonzo Ball, after 1 or 2 years of just being on an NBA training program, be it lifting, conditioning, all that sort of stuff, just 1 or 2 years of that, he's a different player. So development has to be the number one goal, no matter who you draft.
I mean, look at Porzingis. He made the jump from year one, year two, and I know people are going to say, well, it's not a big jump, but it's something at least. You know, he's got averaging like 18-8 or something like that.
And again, Porzingis is a different case because as an international player, you're learning how to play real basketball because it's your life. It's literally a professional sports academy with school on the side. But at least in Europe, they're honest about it.
That's true. But, you know, we could talk about this for many hours because it's an interesting debate considering how the NCAA final, you know, ended and these players are coming out of the draft. We'll see how these players are going to be if they get redrafted to the NBA. But I also want to say one more thing before we talk about baseball teams is that I think for the players to get drafted, though, it can't just be on them, the organization developing them. They have to do it themselves,
of
too.
Of course!
I mean, you can do so much for a player, but if he doesn't want to do it,
there's
no point.
That was never up for debate. You're absolutely right. If a kid doesn't want to get better, then that's that. And you're wasting everyone's time. I just really feel like we need to be a lot more honest and we need to be a lot more clear about what you actually expect of those kids. And if you don't think they're a risk worth taking, all the talent in the world ain't gonna save him if his mind's not right. So, again, everything can't be on the kid. The GM has to make the call. The scouts, whomever they employ, have to make the call too. So,
yeah. Speaking of what we can expect.
And I'm sorry, but it is also worth noting, everyone who said the one-and-done rule was trash, well, Karl Anthony Towns is younger than every single starter on both teams, so...
And it's more, I guess, like, some of it is from family, some of it is from organization, some of it is just you. So, I mean, all those factor in who the player can be at the end of the day. But speaking of what we expect, you know, it's funny how the MLB season started, like, pretty much a week ago, because now we're going into the second week, basically. And the New York Yankees and Mets have started, and the Yankees won today, and hopefully the Mets are going to win today because they're 2-3. But it's funny how these teams are starting their season in different directions, because you have one team who, even though they won today, the Yankees, they're now 2-4. They were actually 1-4, almost at the same record as the New York Jets in the first 5 weeks of their season. And you had the Mets, who were 2-3, same record as the Giants in their start of the season. And it's just like, one team is in the rebuild while the other team is in the win now. It's kind of ironic, though, because Noah Syndergaard, who had this ridiculous comment to say, well, this town's a New York Mets team. Noah, I don't need you to be Thor and not Iron Man, okay? That's something what Iron Man would say, because he likes to talk a lot and stuff. But Noah Syndergaard is talking a lot because he's saying this is a Mets town. You guys haven't really won a title yet to say that. I know you guys are good, but right now it's still Yankees town, because Yankees have won. Even though they haven't won recently, they have won more World Series than the Mets ever dreamed of.
But let's be honest about what recently actually means. I mean, the Mets were in the World Series 2 years ago.
But they didn't win.
But they were in the World Series. Where were the Yankees?
But they lost.
But they were in it. And that's what I'm saying. That's why, even though Noah Syndergaard's running his mouth a little bit, he's not entirely wrong by saying that it's a lot more split. Or I would venture to say that he's right. This town is more pro-Mets in general than pro-Yankees. Because, yes, you've got Gary Sanchez and you've got some of the kids, but that's it. The whole world knows that the Yankees are in rebuild mode. And that's okay, because it's the right move and that's what's supposed to happen. But what do the Mets have? They have Matt Harvey, the Dark Knight, who, hate him or love him, is as polarizing a figure you'll ever see. You have Noah Syndergaard, who people will still pay attention to just because he can throw 100 miles an hour and has a 90-mile-an-hour changeup, or is it a 90-mile-an-hour slider.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who cares? The point is he has it, and it's crazy. People are still looking for David Wright, even though he probably won't end up picking up a bat until May 5th. That's polarizing. People care about that because they're good. And not just, oh, they're when the NL East good. They are World Series potential good. Everything has to be in line, but they're still World Series potential good. So I can't really chide Noah Syndergaard for saying that, oh, it's a Mets town now. He's laying a claim to it. There's nothing wrong with that.
But look at it from this standpoint on the Mets, though. I mean, they went to the World Series 2 years ago, right? And now they're bragging about, oh, this is their town and everything. But in the words of Derek Jeter, and he said in a conversation before about losing, you know, you get to the World Series and you lose. I mean, are you happy about being second place? Like, even though you guys made it this far, you guys lost.
Lost. Yeah, but I don't think... But claiming it's his town is not the same as saying, oh, we're satisfied finishing second in the World Series. Nah. It's not the same thing. You still have to be proud of the fact that, yeah, you won a pennant, but it's not saying, oh, it's better than winning a World Series. It's just saying that it's our town now, and it's our time to do what we know we can do.
Like the Jets.
There's nothing wrong with exuding confidence.
It's like the Jets, though, the few, you know, 2009, 2010, when they were made to the back-to-back AFC Championship, say, oh, it's a Jets town.
Who said it was a Jets town?
The Jets were saying that during that stretch. And not Jets fans, too.
But here's why it was ridiculous. Eli won a Super Bowl not too long before this whole debacle started. There's no way it could have ever been a Jets town. That statement in itself doesn't make sense. At least when you go Mets versus Yankees, the Yankees hadn't done anything of consequence since 2010. Heck, I would even go as far back as 2009. The Yankees haven't really done anything of postseason consequence. Meanwhile, the Giants stopped 19-0 from happening. In fact, Jets fans who said that it's a Jets town should be really thanking the Giants that Patriot fans aren't walking around with 19-0 shirts. Instead, they're walking around with 28-3 shirts, but that's a whole other story entirely.
Or walking around with 7 rings instead of 5. Think about that, too.
Stop it. But, by the way, the Mets are up 2-0 in the bottom of the first. It's just...
It's too early, though, to say.
It's just... I'm not dissatisfied with Syndergaard saying what he said.
I kind of am. I think he just keep his mouth shut and play the game.
Everybody wants to say that dumb nonsense.
Because
baseball players aren't allowed to have a personality. If you're a professional athlete, you're not allowed to say anything. You're not allowed to be yourself. You're not allowed to exude confidence because otherwise you're being a braggart. That's so, like, everybody hop off.
Karma comes to haunt you, though. If you say stuff like that, you think the pressure's on you.
He didn't say, oh, I wish the Yankees died. He didn't say, oh, we're a better team than the Yankees. He said, it's a Mets town now.
Yeah, but you gotta prove it. Win a World Series first, then you can talk. You just getting there doesn't mean nothing.
Getting there doesn't mean anything.
I get to the
don't
final.
Tell that to the Yankees. The Yankees haven't been to the World Series since they won it in 2009.
Yeah, but you think they care if they lost? You think they would care, though?
The Yankees had a better team in 2010, 2011, and 2012, and they didn't even make it past the first round. Actually, no, I take that back. They went to the ALCS against the Tigers and got beat, and they weren't even a good Tigers team. That Tigers team was actually not good at all.
Yeah, but it was a successful season. No, it wasn't because they didn't win a World Series. The Mets, they went to World Series. Was it a successful season for them? No, they didn't win.
But what I'm trying to say is to have this conversation like the Mets didn't do anything, the Mets have been in one more World Series than the Yankees have been since the start of the decade. And it was recent. Like, actually recent.
But they lost.
But they got there. The Yankees didn't even make the postseason last year.
So you're happy to get second place, as you tell me?
No. I don't understand how we're still stuck on this because Noah Syndergaard did not say we're happy we finished in second. He said it's our town. The Yankees don't have a stranglehold on the town anymore. And he's right. Because the Yankees still last year had attendance problems. The Mets didn't. The Yankees the year before that. Without Derek Jeter retiring, nobody would care because the team was bad. Joe Girardi managed them to an over 500 record, robbed of a Manager of the Year award. But regardless of all of that, they didn't do anything. That's it.
Still a Yankee town, though. Just saying.
Not right
now. And I'm not being biased or anything. I'm just saying. Just
not right now.
Let's win a World Series. Then you can say that it's a Mets town.
People, listen, you've gotten local newscasts caring more about the Mets. Why? Because the Mets were in a World Series recently. Everyone is, not everyone anymore, but coming into the season, everyone was seen as healthy, and there it is. And they're in a division that they should win handily, and they should at least host a round of the playoffs. Can't say that about the Yankees. Not even a little bit.
Can't say it,
if the Yankees make the second wild card, it's considered a successful season. Can't say that about the Mets. So that in itself makes it more of a Mets town than a Yankees town. Because people care more.
Well, here's the difference between these two teams, okay? The Yankees, they're a team that, or organization that a lot of, you know, MLB teams hate because they pay a lot of money for these players, but they also win a lot. And their goal every year is to win the World Series or else it's a bust for them. Even though they're in a rebuild, I know they're saying the right things and say, oh, you know, hope we make the playoffs and everything. But in the back of their heads, they always say, we want to go as far and win a World Series. But the Mets are different because they look at it in their mindset saying, well, we won a lot of games over the Yankees, so, you know, we're better than them now, and we're the talk of the town.
How did we get here? That doesn't make any sense. And even so, let's go back to this whole Yankee mindset, first of all, because ownership is the entire reason why the Yankees are rebuilding now instead of rebuilding 2 or 3 years ago. The Yankees could very well have been having a Subway Series primer, right? Instead, the Yankees said, oh, we're going to fill this stopgap with this veteran. He'll get us to the wild card, and then we'll get hot. Okay, we're going to get this stopgap. Instead of just saying, yo, get off the pot, clear off the ship, and let's start over. If they had done this 2 or 3 years ago, then yeah, maybe you can say the Mets are talking too much. But no.
But they always talk too much.
The Yankees played for the present, And that's why you can argue that it is a Mets town
but,
now.
But the Mets always talk a lot. When they get
who?
Good.
Who?
When they
who?
Get
who?
Good,
who?
I'm just saying
who?
Players overall. When they get good,
who?
They start talking.
I need facts. Who? All you've mentioned is Syndergaard making one comment about it being a Mets town, which he's not wrong about right now. But who else has been running their mouths?
Fans.
Who cares about them?
And they always do that.
Who cares about them?
It's like the Jet fans as much as the Knicks fans when they get great.
And Jets fans are trash. And the Jets are trash. Who cares?
But I'm saying when the Jets are good, they start talking trash. When the Knicks are good, they start talking
trash. But who cares about the fans running their mouths? Our whole conversation has been about the Mets thinking that it's about the Mets feeling like they've made it already when they haven't won anything. If it's the fans giving off that perception, then the whole conversation is moot. Noah Syndergaard made a perfectly valid point because the Mets have accomplished more in the past 3 years than the Yankees have.
So
and guess what? Everyone is a prisoner of the moment. Everybody.
So that gives you the right, though, to say that? Just because you've been more accomplished in 3 years over the Yankees?
Yeah.
Rather than just win a War Series, and then you can use that as your talking trash, basically?
I'm going to say it one more time. How far away was 2009? How many years is that?
8 years.
It was 8 years. So what you're asking me is whether winning a World Series 8 years ago versus making it to the World Series is it? It's two years ago now. Yes.
Yeah.
2 years ago, all of a sudden that title 8 years ago justifies it when a team that recently went to the World Series saying we can split this. It's a takeover now. Because listen, I am a Yankee fan. And I'm tired of hearing the 27 rings talk. It's annoying. Because we weren't alive for even half of them.
That's true.
Like seriously. you've got, if you did not live through World War II, I do not want to hear anything about you bragging about Murderers Row. You didn't watch Babe Ruth yank one over the wall. You were never there for Lou Gehrig's speech when he said, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. You can't even talk about Joe DiMaggio hitting in 56 straight games. What are you talking about, this whole Yankee legacy? Oh, our lineage this. Oh, we that. Oh, we this. You aren't even alive for half of it. Half of them can't even tell you who the first black Yankee was.
Oh,
don't worry. I'll wait. You feel free to prove me wrong. It's Elston Howard, by the way. Also, first black catcher in the AL East.
But we can also look at it overall the Yankees for the past 15 years. Who's been more dominant in that?
We're
stretch?
Not talking about the past 15 years, though. He said it's a. He didn't say it was a Mets town in 2010. He said it's a Mets town right now, and he's right.
Until the Mets start losing, then what's gonna happen next? Oh, the Yankee town's gonna be out because the Yankees are gonna start winning.
Who cares? Right now, he's talking about the fact that people care more about the Mets than the Yankees. And it's an absolute fact right now because the Mets can win a World Series.
And they're also putting the pressure on themselves right now by saying that. Because if they don't win it, then what's going to happen is that they're going to be trashing them until the next season. Until they actually try
because
to get
because that doesn't happen anyway.
Because
it doesn't happen anyway. I can guarantee you can find the same people who are going to go off on Noah Syndergaard for making that comment. These are the same people that are still chiding Clint Frazier for asking about Mickey Mantle's number, which is, by the way, the single most hilarious thing I have ever heard. They're both inconsequential. Who cares? I just really think it's funny that a rookie really said, "Yo, can y'all retire? Can y'all unretire number 7 for me? I want to wear it." Can y'all unretire the greatest switch hitter ever in baseball history? I want to wear his number this year. Nah, for real, please, come on, man.
Look, all I'm saying
that was
is that
funny. That was really funny.
All I'm saying though is that you're right that Noah Syndergaard says the Mets town right now, but sometimes words like that can really haunt a team's mindset into this season now. Because now the pressure is going to be, can they win it this year? And if they don't win it this year, they look like fools.
I disagree. If they do better than the Yankees and they go farther than the Yankees,
have you ever
that's actually
have
right.
you heard a Yankee player ever say this is a Yankees town?
No, you would never. They would.
Well, because they're a classy organization. They don't care about. They care about winning.
No, this is the same organization that said we don't want plebeians having premium seat tickets.
Okay,
we're not really going to talk about classic Yankees right now.
I'm not talking about the business aspect. I'm talking about baseball itself. Have we ever had a Yankee player ever say this is a Yankee town? Have you ever heard that from any Yankee player? Oh, Alex Rodriguez, Jeter, even in the past. Have you heard anybody say, "Oh, this is a Yankee town"? You know what they care about? All they care about is wins. They don't even care about the whole other town. You just want to win.
Oh, that's bull. That's absolute bull. You're telling me just because they don't tell the media that they don't care? Are you? No way!
Well, of course.
Of
course they're not going to tell
all
the media, it's a Yankee town.
All the time they probably trash talk each other talking about, yeah, we run New York now. I will bet you if David Wright and Derek Jeter were close, they'd be trading barbs back and forth. Haha, my team's better than yours. Just because they don't tell them.
They don't say it, but I'm just saying they say a lot of classy things. Like, even when Jeter says, playing against the
except
Mets.
Except for Derek Jeter, but I like playing. I like playing for Derek Jeter. But it's all fake.
He likes playing against the Mets.
And y'all treasure that. I don't understand how people just treasure that when you know they're lying. You know it's fake.
But the best organizations in sports always say classy things. Look at the Spurs and the Patriots and the other. They don't say, of course, to me, oh, you know, we're better than this team or we're this and that. They just say it in a more classy way, but they know in the back of their heads they want to prove, you know, they're better than most of these teams or whatever and talk trash and all that.
What does that have to do with the Mets again?
Well, I'm just saying the Mets are one of those teams right now where when they become good, they start talking trash when really they should just win a championship first and then you can start talking about that.
I'm asking you one simple question. Has anybody else aside from Syndergaard made similar remarks?
No, because they're not idiots.
All right, then. So that ends this conversation.
But they're not idiots either. They're not trying to put more pressure on themselves and be like, yo, we got to win it this year. We look like fools.
You really think they're going to base their goal for the season off of one comment from Noah Syndergaard?
One comment can change everything for a team.
If anything, it probably pisses them off enough to be like, oh, yeah, bet. I'm ready.
In fact, I know this may not be a good comparison, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway, though. When Carmelo Anthony said a few years ago about the Knicks team that he was with, you know, the 54 Winston, telling him this is the best team I've ever been on, I still remember that to my head because I look at the teams right now, they're not as good as that team, and I feel like he's never going to be on a good team like that ever again in his career.
A bunch of that is on management because that's not really something he can do.
And I'm afraid of the Mets doing management too, and then there have been a team where they're cheap and they don't spend a lot of money, but now they're doing that. But if they don't get up to that, it might haunt them.
Look, say what you want about the Wilpons, but Sandy Alderson is a Hall of Fame general manager. The fact that he was able to make the moves that he made back when the Wilpons weren't spending money on the team is insane. So I don't think management is really a big worry for the Mets because I don't know how he got Yoenis Cespedes here, and I will forever maintain that the moment that the A's traded him, granted, he made a stop in Detroit and in Boston before he got to the Mets, but the A's managed themselves out of a World Series because they're really deep lineup. They took away their most fearsome hitter. And then that year is when they went to the wild card game with the Royals and got knocked out. Meanwhile, Sandy Alderson has consistently managed his team and put them in a spot to make the playoffs with a shoestring budget. I wouldn't worry too much about management if I'm the Mets.
Don't worry about health. That's all they're going to worry about for that team.
And health is really out of your control.
Well, most teams are all, but I'm saying specifically for the Mets and their pitching rotation because they had a lot of injuries last season.
Absolutely.
And if they don't stay healthy this season, then that's going to be a problem.
Zach Wheeler just got back. He got robbed.
That's what I'm saying. And I know they're winning right now, but the thing is I'm one of those teams where I'm on those people where we have a team. Just win the game. Don't talk trash. Don't be that kid in class that talks trash. Or that player you face in high school or in college where he's just talking trash at you to get into your mind. You just play your game. Just ask Kawhi Leonard. People talk trash to him. Doesn't care. Just wins. That's all. Just play the game. That's what you gotta do.
Let's ask ourselves a really honest question. Do y'all really want I'm going to ask you specifically. Do you really want everyone to play like Kawhi Leonard?
No, it may be boring
exactly.
as hell.
So, but I'm exactly. so stop it.
But,
so stop it.
But I'm just saying.
You need your Russell Westbrooks that come through. You need a LeBron James moment where he blocks somebody and smack talks them. You need moments like that. You want players like that. Let's stop homogenizing.
For entertainment, yeah. For entertainment purposes,
but,
yeah.
But it's real, too. Let's stop homogenizing competition. I hate that. You don't want to let people be expressive. You don't
want to. I'm not saying let them be expressive, but just be careful what you say. That's all I'm saying.
That's part of being expressive. And you know what? If he's wrong, I'm pretty sure he's going to come out and say, you know what? I was wrong.
I don't know if he'll say that, but you never know.
All I know is that we have to get to a point where people can be themselves. Because that's A, that's life. Then B, it's a really important part of competition, too. Because it's fun. It's really fun to compete.
But it's kind of hard to say. I'm just saying, like, you know, we keep saying it's a mess up, and we've been talking for, like, the past couple minutes about this, but it's hard to say that right now when you're, like, 2-3, and you could possibly be 2-4 if you lose this game tonight.
It's a 162-game season. Who cares?
All right. I'm just...
Call me at the end.
I'm a strong believer in slow starts, though, too, in MLB. So if they got a slow start, it's kind
of
hard for them.
Let's not even talk about the end of April. Call me at the end of May. All right,
and then we can
start talking about, oh well, maybe there's something to be worried about.
What about the end of June when really that's when baseball season looks like it really starts to heat up?
Oh, if it's the end of June, then yeah, we can have the conversation.
It'll be interesting to see if they're actually going to be a good record when that off comes.
I think they'll be just fine. Look, the Nationals are still having really weird pitching woes right now.
Yeah,
because they picked Coda Glover as their starter, as their closer, rather. No, actually, they picked Blake Treinen. I apologize. Which is another no-name guy. The only name in that bullpen I even really recognize is Sean Kelly because he was a former Yankee. So, the Nationals have bullpen woes. The Marlins are always a flash in the pan. The Phillies are going to suck, and the Braves are going to suck. So, the Mets should win the division, bar none.
They should, but, I mean, would it be a Met thing, though, if we just don't?
It would be funny. I can't even lie. It would be
funny.
Or
just be a wild card team, win the first round, and get bounced out by the Cubs in the second round.
But the Cubs are a really good team, though. So it wouldn't be an insult if they got bounced by the Cubs. It would be an insult if they got bounced by the Diamondbacks. Like if the Diamondbacks sneak into that second wild card spot and do what the Giants did to them last year.
That's true. But anything's possible, man. I'm telling you. I know it's still early into the season. Things can happen. Injuries can happen. So early, but, you know.
It's almost like you want it to happen.
No, I don't want it to happen, but I'm just saying, be careful what you say. Words can be strong, man. People look at it, they look at it differently.
All right.
So, you know, that's going to do it for today. The first hour of Sports Talk 1240, though. I want to thank you guys for all listening, talking about college and, of course, MLB teams of sports. Second hour is up. We got Mike Vavil talking more sports on Sports Talk 1240 a.m.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.